Recently in Nigeria, a radical Islamic group, Boko Haram, has made international headlines for kidnapping about 300 girls. To discuss this story and the kidnapping group, with us today is Dr. Paul Marshall, author of Their Blood Cries Out, which deals with modern anti-Christian persecution in the world. Dr. Marshall is a fellow with the Hudson Institute, and I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. Dr. Marshall, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me, Jerry.
Sure. So let's start out by asking you about the group that did this incredible kidnapping. Who is or what is Boko Haram?
It's a group. Boko Haram is sort of a nickname, which basically means something like Western education is forbidden. It actually has a longer name, which is much harder to pronounce, but it translates as the Association Advancing the Prophet's Teachings and Jihad. It's a radical Islamist group. It's probably been in existence for 4 or 5 years, but it came out of another group in Nigeria, Al-Sunnah Wal-Jama, which came up about 10 years ago. That group was nicknamed the Taliban, because it's very like the Taliban in Nigeria and very like Boko Haram. So you've had, while Boko Haram as an official organization is 5, 6 years old, it's a continuation of previous organizations and militant groups in Nigeria, which have been operating for about 15 years, and tens of thousands of people have died in those conflicts.
Tens of thousands. Now, you've been following the overall story of anti-Christian persecution. As I say, you wrote that book, Their Blood Cries Out. That was written in the 1990s, I believe. If anything, have things gotten worse since the time you wrote the book?
In many places, yes. And let me just mention for our listeners,
yes.
With Leila Gilbert, who co-authored that book, and my colleague Nina Shea, we had another book out last year, which is also a survey of anti-Christian persecution. And that book is called Persecuted, The Global Assault on Christians. So that gives us a sort of more up-to-date
perspective on these
overview.
Things. Yeah.
Where
can people get more information about that? Hudson.org or something?
You can't order it from us. Thomas Nelson published it.
Oh, okay.
So if you go to Thomas Nelson's website.
Sure.
If you can't sort of remember the title, Persecuted, the Global Assault on Christians, then go to the Hudson Institute website, hudson.org. Then within that, go to the Center for Religious Freedom, and you'll see information about the book. And I think we have a couple of chapters up there as well.
Okay, so here's my question. This kidnapping, which has gotten international headlines, which is unusual for this kind of thing, is it basically an anti-Christian act? Are Christians the victims in this?
Christians are, in this kidnapping of the girls, Christians are most of the victims.
Okay.
It took place in a state school, those schools will usually have Muslims and Christians together, but it was in a Christian area. And so most of those girls are going to be Christian. And yesterday it was reported that many of them had been forcibly converted to Islam. And
right.
The videos, which as far as we can tell, are genuine of a group of about 70 girls sort of wearing head coverings and doing Muslim prayers. So there is an anti-Christian element in Boko Haram that has... I remember at Christmas, about a year and a half ago, it bombed churches on Christmas Day in 5 different places and killed about 90 people.
Wow.
So that element is there. But we need to add, Boko Haram also attacks Muslims, particularly it's been attacking people connected with education. It believes that Western education undercuts Islam, is against Islam, so Muslims involved in it. Including there's probably some Muslim girls in this group, though they'd mainly be Christian,
I see.
Are violating Islam, so they deserve what they get as well. And this group burns down schools. It burned down a school about 5 months ago, and about 90 school children were killed in that.
Wow. And yet that didn't make the headlines. Why did the 300 being kidnapped make headlines?
I think it's because, firstly, there's video. You know, for television,
yeah.
It doesn't happen in front of a camera.
That's
to a large degree, it doesn't happen.
That's a good point.
There are exceptions. But TV is a thing you look at. And they don't want, you don't want to just look at a person reading something to you. So the fact that this group has been putting out videos helps. They're looking for publicity.
Right.
I think it's just an unusual act. You know, 250, 300 teenage schoolgirls kidnapped.
Yeah.
And then it's announced they're going to be sold into slavery and forcibly married. That's dramatic. That's different. So it gets attention.
Yeah.
And I'm very glad of that. But have complained over the years that, you know, in the thousands of people who have been killed by Boko Haram, hasn't got very much attention at all. The burning down the school, 90 school children burned alive, that didn't get attention.
That's astounding.
It's dramatic.
Yeah, yep. That is absolutely astounding. You're right. And by the way, speaking of that no TV camera, no coverage,
yep.
I remember back when South Africa was practicing, apartheid, which was institutionalized racism. And after a certain point, they decided in the 1980s, the rulers in South Africa, that they would disallow TV cameras and so forth. And all of a sudden, the coverage about South Africa, even though they continued with the apartheid policies, the coverage did plummet only because of the very same principle you are pointing out now. Let me ask you, going back to this recent story where these girls supposedly converted, isn't that kind of a situation? Well, it's basically, hey, you want to keep your head? Then you convert, convert or die, basically.
Yes. I mean, these are teenagers. They've been kidnapped. They're surrounded by armed men. They've probably been raped. A conversion in that situation is not a real conversion. It's if you convert, we might not sell you. We don't know what they did, but this was not a free, open choice. Which these kids made.
So exactly what are the goals of Boko Haram? And by the way, is that the only radical Islamic group within Nigeria itself?
There are a couple of smaller ones.
So that's the main one.
Operate in the northwest of the country.
Yeah.
But this is the major one. It's 90% plus of Islamic radicals are going to be part of Boko Haram. At least, malicious armed groups doing attacks. There's been other radical movements who want to institute Sharia law, but they're not going around killing people.
I see. Okay, so what are the goals of Boko Haram? What do they want to see happen in Nigeria?
They want an Islamic State in Nigeria. They are quite outspoken about this. The person regarded as their leader has a sort of education in Islamic law. And they're quite explicit. They want to drive out all Christians from the north. Let me just mention, in Nigeria, the south of Nigeria is majority Christian, though there are Muslims there. The north of Nigeria is predominantly Muslim, though there are also Christians there.
Mm.
They want to drive, either get Christians to convert or flee from the north, so it's total Islamic. And Boko Haram is type of Islamic. They'll kill or drive out Muslims who don't agree. And, of course, they're attacking government installations, police, schools, things of that kind. And they want to institute a version of Sharia law, the kind of thing which we had under the Taliban in Afghanistan, mm-hmm. similar to what they have in Saudi Arabia or Somalia, other places. So, or now parts of Syria, where the Al-Qaeda groups have taken over. So that's what they want, and in the end they want to spread that to all of Nigeria and then beyond. So they want to institute what they regard as a Muslim state in Nigeria.
Hmm. All right, we're talking right now with Dr. Paul Marshall, who is a fellow with the Hudson Institute. He's co-author of a book called Persecuted, and give us the subtitle of that author, I mean of that book.
The Global Assault on Christians.
Which you also wrote with Nina Shea. We've had her I've interviewed her many times.
Yeah, I wrote that with Nina Shea and also with Leela Gilbert, who wrote the earlier book, The Blood Cries Out. Leela and I wrote that.
I see.
Nina Shea joined us for this latest one.
Sure. Now, some in the West, for example, let's take President Obama, okay? It seems like, and then his former Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, they were not willing to identify Boko Haram as a terrorist group, as I understand it. And I wonder, you know, some people have said, oh, it's a racist thing. No, I would think it's more of a, they don't want to be, you know, offending the Muslims or something like that. But what are your thoughts? Clearly, this is a racist group.
One school of thought is, it's like discussions around Benghazi. They wanted to shy away from the fact that you got this other Islamist terrorist group operating. In the lead into the election, you wanted to say that Al-Qaeda, and by the way, Boko Haram has said it's affiliated with Al-Qaeda, that Al-Qaeda is sort of on the run. But if you acknowledge that this group now with probably several thousand fighters is in fact a terrorist group, then that makes your anti-terrorism policy look worse. That's one theory. I'm not saying it's true.
Right, right.
Because we don't know the minds of the State Department. But that's one theory. The other one is they said, well, you know, this could... this may play into their hands, making them look sort of famous and efficient, giving them sort of good press as a bona fide terrorist group. If we just call them criminals, there's not as much prestige. There's that school too. But another one, I think, and this is still going on, and this I will say is going on in the State Department, is to downplay the religious element of this. The State Department, in its many of its statements, still does it, and much of the newspapers do it. The State Department said, "Well, you know, it isn't religious; it's just political. It's around poverty." Well, I'm sure poverty is a factor, but you know, poor people could decide to become communists and have a communist state, or be fascists, or anything. You know, these people want a radical Islamist state.
Yeah.
So the religious dimension is real. Let me just give you a quotation from the current leader, Abubakar Shekau. Again, this is a video, and he's on it. He says, "Everybody knows that democracy and the constitution, that's the Nigerian constitution, is paganism. You Christians should know that Jesus is not the Son of God. This religion of Christianity you're practicing is not a religion of God. It's paganism. We are trying to coerce you to embrace Islam because that is what God instructed us to do." Now, that's, I don't know about you, but that sounds quite religious to me.
Yes.
And they come out with many of these statements, and our diplomats sort of pass it over. As if they don't want to alienate Muslims. They've also said that Boko Haram has killed more Muslims than Christians.
Whoa.
Which I don't think is true. Let me emphasize, they kill Muslims.
Most
Nigerian Muslims don't go along with that program. They
right.
kill them.
Right.
That school they burnt down was a Muslim school. But it's their version of Islam against everybody else. So there's that strong religious motive.
Sure.
You know, recently, talking about media coverage, the New York Times, in an article now about 3 weeks ago, it's changed a bit, said, you know, their motives are mysterious. And what they put out videos, they put out statements, they announce what they're doing. We want an Islamic State, and we're going to fight against unbelievers and false Muslims.
And they say all this by Allah, and Allah wants us to do this, and Allah wants us to do that. I don't understand that secularistic mentality of, let's say the New York Times writers or, you know, op-ed folks, or editorial page editors, and then also the State Department officials, where they're not willing to recognize if you undercut the religious motivation, in this case, you know, obviously the strict Islamic motivation, you undercut the whole story.
You do, and you're not equipped to oppose them. If you don't know what someone's trying to do, or you wouldn't admit it, it's very hard to oppose them. Of course, they don't want to say that all Muslims believe this. They don't. That's why Boko Haram is killing Muslims.
Right.
But it's an attempt to hide. It's either an attempt to hide it to avoid offending people, or it could be just the view that religion's not real. When someone says it's religious, that's just a selfish sheen. We need to dig underneath to find the real motive. And the thing which drives people is never religion. It's got to be. It's money, sex, or power. So we must look at those. So that religion can't be the factor. So it's a sort of secular mindset which just says that religion doesn't drive people. It has to be something else.
Right. So. Well, you know, there's a, I know you know this man. You probably know him personally. But the medical doctor who lives in Arizona, who is a Muslim, but he doesn't agree with Al-Qaeda and Boko Haram and Osama bin Laden and all the radicals. And he's out there publicly speaking out against these things. Doesn't have many moderate Muslims joining alongside him. But he said famously, we're just chasing our tail if we don't diagnose this thing properly. So, for example, with the Fort Hood shooting, the Pentagon came out with an 86-something page report and didn't mention Islam, didn't mention Muslim, didn't mention Allah, didn't mention the man's name, which is a Muslim name. You know, the whole motive for the shooting apparently was rooted in his understanding of Islam, and they didn't mention that, and instead it was classified as workplace violence or something like that. And he said, we're just chasing our tail.
And again, this is a man, you know, just because a Muslim does something, it, you know, might not be for sort of Muslim reasons, that's true. But in the case of Boko Haram, they say explicitly while they're doing, and then Major Hassan, who carried out the shooting at Fort Hood,
yeah.
I mean, he produced a PowerPoint presentation to explain his views.
Yes.
I mean, it was not mysterious that he was committed to fight jihad. I mean, these people are very explicit about what's driving them. And how can you fight against people, oppose people, if you won't admit it? And just to mention, the Muslim man you mentioned from Arizona is Dr. Zuhdi Jasser.
Right, exactly. And he, as a medical doctor, makes the observation, you know, applying, let's say, the same analogy to his own field. As a medical doctor, if you can't diagnose something properly, then obviously you're not going to treat it properly. And so if our diplomats in the State Department or, let's say, in the administration or whatever, are not recognizing the Islamic factor to this whole thing, they're missing the real story. Because by the kidnapper's own admission, this is all about Islam, as they understand it.
And let me just sort of switch to another government agency. Because the State Department most people in the State Department have been sort of denying this connection for quite a while, either for, you know, PR, public relations reasons, or that they don't believe the relation is there. Speaking with people in the military who have more people on the ground around there, their view is very much that this is this is a radical Islamist group, and their motive is to impose their view, because you've seen links between Boko Haram. They've had fighters coming over from the country Niger, just north. And then next north of that is the country of Mali. You might remember a year or two back, an Islamist group took over northern Mali using weapons taken from Syria. And it was the French troops who in the end drove them out. Mali has traditionally been a very sort of peace-loving, stable, and pretty democratic country. It's a majority Muslim country. But Al-Qaeda groups took over that. And it looks like many of Boko Haram's weapons are coming from Libya, which is in chaos. So you're seeing a linking of Boko Haram and other terrorist groups in the Sahara Desert and in West Africa. So the military is very aware of these sorts of links. So I think they're much more realistic in their judgments about what Boko Haram is and what it's doing.
We're talking right now with Dr. Paul Marshall, a fellow with Hudson Institute, author of some books on the anti-Christian persecution, including Persecution, the Global Assault on Christians, which he co-wrote with Nina Shea and someone else. I forgot her name. Lila Roberts?
Okay. Lila Gilbert.
Yeah, her too. No, I'm just kidding. So going back to Al-Qaeda, if you were to say, let's say we talked about 100% of the radical Muslims all over the world, what percentage of the 100% radical Muslims, the ones like Boko Haram, where they would literally kidnap people, they would literally cut throats and so forth in the name of Allah, what percentage of the 100% radical Muslims are affiliated with Al-Qaeda, to the best of our knowledge?
We're looking at killers. I don't know. And let me add another caution is, you know, it's what you say affiliated with. How strong does the association have to be? I would say so. Well over half of these groups profess to be allied with and supporters of Al-Qaeda. And the number may be much higher. That doesn't mean they take orders from them.
Right.
I don't think Zawahiri in Afghanistan sends a message to Boko Haram and say, attack Madaguru next week. But they affirm that we support them, we stand for the same things, we're in the same struggle, we're in the same fight. So the majority of groups have said that, and they have a similar goal of wanting to institute their version of Islamic law and setting up territories that they control where it's administered.
Now, I know it's kind of scary sometimes to estimate on numbers, but if we say that there's about 1.2 billion or so Muslims around the world, what percentage of those would be radicalized? I've heard numbers as high as 10 to 15%. If that's accurate, you're still talking about tens of millions of people, I suppose.
Yeah. Now, it's a lot depends. It's like the other word, what does affiliated with Al-Qaeda mean? You know, what constitutes a radical? You could have people, I'll give an example. I think the current head of Turkey's government, Erdogan, is radical. I mean, he's pushing very strong in terms of transforming the Turkish state. Has more journalists in prison than anywhere else. But he's not going to go around bombing people or shooting people. He's not warlike, but I would say he was radical. So if you include people who want something like an Islamic State, then I think you're looking at 20-30% of Muslims. I'm not saying these people are killing anybody or they're terrorists,
right?
But they want an Islamic State.
Yes.
They might support something we'd call Islamist. If you're looking for people who are could be disposed to engage in violence for that, I think you'd be looking at 1 or 2%, but as you've noticed, that's 10 to 20 million people.
Mm. Well, so now
so
going,
that's dangerous.
Yeah, that is dangerous.
I was talking with Canon Andrew White. He's often known as the Vicar of Baghdad. He's an Anglican clergyman, and he has run St. George's Church in Baghdad. His place has been bombed. He's been kidnapped. Many of the people who had worked in the church have been killed. He's in the middle of a desperate situation, and he was up here in Washington last week.
To receive an award, I think, right?
He received an award. He received the Wilberforce Award for his services, and also something I'll mention later, it took part in a press conference with a declaration about the situation of Middle East Christians. Mm. But someone asked Andrew, this is now in referring to Iraq, where Al-Qaeda is operating very strongly.
Mm.
And, you know, as I say, he's been bombed. He said the actual number of people doing these things is 1 or 2%.
Oh.
He says, you know, in our clinics and everything else we have in Baghdad, you know, the Muslim, he said, you know, my assistant's a Muslim. She's also the dentist in the clinic. But, you know, 1 or 2%, you're dealing with tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of people. And with that number going around killing people can
yes.
overturn, you know, an entire country.
That makes
so,
sense. And what was it you wanted to mention? Because time is escaping us. We only have about 3 or 4 minutes left.
Last Wednesday, two members of Congress, Frank Wolf, a Republican from Virginia.
Fantastic man.
Who you would know. And then Anna Eshoo, a Democrat from California, who's of Assyrian, Iraqi Christian background.
Oh, wow.
And they organized, and we at the Center for Religious Freedom at Hudson helped them in organizing this, to make a statement, a pledge about the plight of Middle Eastern Christians, particularly in Iraq, Syria, and Egypt.
Wow.
And we had a press conference with 10 church leaders. Canon White was one of them. But we also had Cardinal Lowe, who's the Catholic Archbishop of Washington, and other senior Catholic figures, an Armenian Archbishop, members of the Greek Orthodox Church.
Do you want people around the country? Do you want people, including our
yes.
listeners, do you want them to sign the pledge? And if so, how would we get access to it?
There's two ways you can go. Go to the Hudson Institute website, www.hudson.org. Go to Center for Religious Freedom. The pledge is up there,
okay.
and there's a place to sign it.
Super.
Or you can go to Frank Wolf's website or Anna Eshoo's website, and again, you will see that. And all of our listeners can add their name to that. And it's a very broad-based Christian coalition, about the most broad-based I've seen.
Wow. Excellent. All right, so the 300 girls, what needs to be said about them that hasn't been said? Do you think the chances are possible that they could be rescued?
It's possible that many of them can be rescued. Again, we don't know if they've been dispersed, whether they've been taken over to the border to Cameroon. But if we can, you know, if we have some drones down there and we use some of our other military tracking means, I think we can be really helpful, because the skill level of much of the Nigerian military is not high.
Yes.
So I think technical support for them, which is what we're giving, could be very useful. And I think also more widespread training in the Nigerian military. I mean, they're fighting a vicious enemy who doesn't, you know, wear uniforms and
right.
comes out in the dark and shoots people.
Yes.
That's very difficult. But still, often their response is much too brutal. They just go in and kill the military, go in and then kill everybody. So I think we're helpful there. The main thing, main point I want to make is the kidnapping of these girls is obviously a horrible thing. But it's just the latest atrocity. This has been going on for years. And if the girls are rescued, I hope to God, we pray that they may be, the conflict will continue and deaths will continue.
Right.
And we need to be supportive in the long run. We don't need to send soldiers there. But this is a case where, you know, technical support, intelligence and things of that kind can make a real difference. So I hope we get in there for the long haul.
Excellent. Okay, again, we've been talking with Dr. Paul Marshall, the Center for Religious Freedom within Hudson.org. Hudson.org. This is Jerry Newcomb on Vocal Point. Thank you so much, Dr. Marshall, for joining us, and thanks so much for your great work. God bless you.
Okay, thank you very much indeed, Jerry.
Okay, thank you now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.